Good morning and welcome to The Weekender. In this week's episode, we have some special guests, the guys from 4Grindr Rover, and we have some amazing prizes up for grabs. So, for your chance to win one of two copies of Armies and Legions and Hordes, get your comments in on this video, make sure to subscribe, like the video, and don't forget, ding our dong. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Weekender. As you can see, I am joined by Ben from 4Grind, Kat from 4Grind, Jerry, and our very own Ben.
Berkey.
Hello.
Hello. So it's the Ben. Sorry, because Kat's really...
Kat really is Ben, a Ben.
He's bigger than he was.
Jerry
when he was
forgot
little.
To say Jerry, didn't he?
Ben and Jerry.
Ben and Jerry.
Ice cream!
You scream. We all scream for ice cream.
I don't scream for ice cream. I just lick this it.
We're actually quiet now for the first time in like 2 hours because we've been talking rubbish.
We have been hurting the cats.
Although Jerry and I have noticed that we're going for different kinds of beard. I'm going for the remains of colour and the grey bits on the outside. And Jerry's just going down for badger.
Just badger's
on. Oh, hang on. What about... Oh, wait, no, badger's mine's too small and insignificant.
You just look a bit...
It's small and insignificant.
That's really unfair, Justin. How often have you heard that yours is small and insignificant?
Welcome to the show. Good morning, everybody.
Sorry.
Right. Hello. First thing to take care of in the show is a bit of an update from you guys as to what's coming out soon from 4Grind and what we have been filming while you've been over.
Yeah, Justin's had to... Well, Justin and Jerry have had to put up with us for almost a week.
I've loved it. No, Big Ben, great cuddler.
Me, not so much.
I've been teaching Lloyd about man hugs and everything else. Yeah, it's been great.
Well, first, as soon as you guys are through the door, that big bear hug, and I just love it.
And Jerry and I have been Velcroing while we played with our Zulus.
It's been a delight.
It has, actually. The funniest thing is just we played the big game with lots of people, and that took six hours.
6 hours,
yeah. And then Jerry and I were just having another playthrough, and that took us a little bit more, because some of it was on...
Yeah, there was about 3 hours on the Monday night.
Yeah.
And then about three and a half, four on the Tuesday morning.
And I know this is going to sound silly, but genuinely we had fun all the way through, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, we had. We were stopping to take photographs as well.
That was off work time, you know.
Oh, you mean what did we do work-wise here this week?
Yes, that's what everybody wants to know. What new stuff from 4Grind will we be seeing on camera soon?
Who's going to go first, Cad?
Well, should we do this one?
Let's do Andy.
Yes. Yeah. This one has me excited. So you guys are doing some gorgeous Gothic cathedral ruins.
Yes.
Yeah,
so with proper stained glass windows. Look at them! Look at them!
Yeah, that is one of the prototypes.
Uh-huh.
So it looks like there might be three available at Salute, three different designs.
Ah.
But could I just say that one will actually... he's done it a bit, but Andy has made that so you can actually make 16 different variations.
Ooh,
with
that's
that.
Clever.
And then you also get the tile sections with it. Mm-hmm. And then when I was sort of like pimping around with it and wanting to do different things, I actually decided that it really needed some of the rubble in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know later on this year, we're hoping to go back to the Second World War. New buildings, mm-hmm. and we think we'll definitely be putting rubble in that. And I think John actually said that he's fancies, putting one together, spraying it up, because I love it when people actually do more to the kit than mm-hmm. they actually get. So,
well, I mean, like it's one misconception people have with the 4Grind stuff is that once it's built, it's done.
Yeah, but
you
I
can
never
do as much as you want.
I never mention it
or as little.
Yeah, I never mention any stained glass windows because. Cad made them.
Mm-hmm. And it does come with the stained glass windows. Yeah. It comes with the rubble and all the bits you see.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that when you glue it together, like a lot of our other stuff, it'll look exactly like this.
See, I like having that. And I love the fact that you can actually take these stained glass windows and just rough them up and damage them as much as you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's very quite
and
fun.
If I can just show you on the... But you see the little piece that comes out here, he said. That little piece there. That's designed so that when you get another one next to it, you could literally slot them all together and put them together.
You boys are a little bit too clever for me.
Well, I don't know if it's clever or just insane.
Well, if we pop that one out of the way, because we have other stuff that you guys have been working on. We have this. This I love.
So this is Jorgs from Things from the Basement.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his, I don't know whether you'd call it a shrine or a tea house, but it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to the fluted card, we actually had to get the equivalent of a pallet load of this stuff made for us. But we're so glad we've done it now, because you can, you know, it you. Here, you guys are here, and you can see that with regard to tiled roof, it looks really good. Would you like me to put the roof on so it looks like
I'll just do the roof on its own.
Yeah. So I really like that. And I think, you know, talking to... We're in talks with other designers, as you know, Battle Kiwi and that sort of thing, about being there, like, agents and producing their product.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that Jorg has probably the best... For me, he has a brilliant idea. He is going to carry on with his Kickstarters, and he's got a, I think it's an Italian-esque one coming out, Spanish-y Italian-esque one coming out within the month. So
that could be interesting.
I'll give you guys a heads up when that happens so you can link through.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he, you know, he's going to still do his Kickstarters. Then after his Kickstarters, he's going to make all of those kits available through foreground retailers, pre-colored as well. And, I think that's the way he plans to carry on. So can you just brief...
I am liking the idea that designers can come to you and just say, right, so I have some wonderful designs. I'd like you guys to produce them. And you can turn around and go, well, we can do those in color for you if you like.
Well, the funniest thing about that was actually, you know, about and also about being their agent at no cost, is because we're not really agents. We just chat to people.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Jerry, you were looking for a rule system. You were looking for a Pavlov's house, weren't
you? Pavlov's house, yeah.
And I said, I know a man who's just sent me the files on those. And that was Jorg again, from Things from the Basement. And so, yes, it's going to be very good. You know, we're in talks with Crooked Dice about some sci-fi near future vehicles.
Actually,
they've started being produced, and a few other people that we're working on at the moment. And it's nice now, because although I've actually got a chance to do a bit more designing myself, for a long time I've felt that all I'm doing is a job and not being crazy burnt wood person.
Yeah.
The other thing you've done is
This is Kev's micro scale ruins.
Yeah. Now these I like the idea of, because while we were over, you and me have actually sat down and played a game of Titanicus.
Yes.
Don't give away the result.
No.
But these are gorgeous, because you
things
can,
did go boom.
They did. But we can actually take these and use them with the micro scale buildings you've already done.
Yeah.
To give them like ruined tops and stuff, and just like buildings that are down to the foundation for your titans to walk through. In fact, we have a titan there. Pass on here, just to show the scale of this.
Well, and it actually includes some of the pieces for the spacing. A little tiny bit.
Throw it in for you, sir.
So, yes, you've actually added some of these to the base of your titan.
Yep. To give it that sense of scale as well.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you get the nameplate from?
I was about to ask.
That was from Versatile Terrain. They do custom nameplates, so they're really nice.
So, hang on. I can name my titan whatever I want.
You can.
Okay, I'm going to name a titan Bob.
Yeah? Not Justinian, then?
No, that's going to be the Legion.
The Legio Justinian.
Of course.
Yeah, just
I always thought
I'm
you were bigger than just one mech.
So, yeah, the terrain's really nice for scattered terrain.
A lot of
level as well.
Put one onto it, you can actually see it as if it had just ran right through the building.
Yeah, and the other thing that helps in the game is... Although it uses true line of sight, it's going back to kind of the older style of Games Workshop, where if it's 25% covered, it's -1 to hit, 50% covered, it's -2 to hit.
Yep.
So having these buildings, it's not just all there are windows there, I can shoot him maybe. It's now, I can see 25% of him because of the windows, therefore you get -1 to hit, which in our game was really nice, because some of the other micro scale buildings that we've done have got arches and things like that in them.
Well, you were looking for every angle you could to try and hit my engines.
That sounds like I was trying to win.
Who does that?
Seems valid to me.
Nothing wrong with that. But it's lovely to see you guys expanding the terrain range to include multiple skills and multiple systems, and actually seeing more Gothic stuff makes me happy, because I love the work you do.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, another thing that I've really enjoyed is because we've turned a little bit with, you know, I knew Jerry wanted to do Rook's Drift,
that
was a while ago, wasn't it?
I did want to do that.
Years, I think, is the correct phrase to use.
We don't want to mention Roman Forts, then.
No, Andy's head might be watching. No. So
every time it's mentioned,
this
it gets pushed back.
So we have a new...
Reset the clock.
We have a new... we have a new piece now that we're doing with you guys, which is what I really want is a laser kit design for me.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what I want.
I know what you want.
Yeah, what I really, really want.
What you really, really want.
Is a laser cut design.
It's a zigzag.
A ziggurat, yeah. So we've gone ahead now with Jerry. You're having the first one, which is a Rorke's Drift.
Yes.
With all the current information that we now have since about 2014 when the...
No, pushing Andy back further. Jerry, then Justin.
By the way,
no,
there's more.
Then anybody else. This is very, very interesting, you see, because then I said, but obviously Andy Zeck would have to be the next one with his Roman Fork. And then for some reason we got the schedule and it seemed to be Justin.
Justin had slipped himself in there.
With
the
his...
meat and an Andy and Jerry sandwich. Yeah,
would you like to tell them what you're actually looking for, Justin?
Well, we do have a full series that's going to come out on this, but just as a little bit of a tease, anyone who remembers my faction from the Fabled Realms...
Gaia,
yeah, the Fabled Realms bootcamp. I did
Amazon's
the all
Scandinavia.
Female. Yes, so I did sort of Scandinavian all-female war band, and yeah, I kind of want it like a, you know, a little foresty temple type thing for them, and a bit of a Nordic style to it. So I'm currently researching, and I will be plaguing Big Ben.
You should look for it's a wooden church or wooden cathedral in Norway.
Yeah,
With all the wooden tiling,
and it has the pagan
amazing
finials, kind of like dragons on the end. So it's done in quite the traditional style, but it's definitely a Christian church. Mm. Stave churches, I think that's the word I'm looking for. I'm probably wrong.
I'm sorry, but these ladies ain't Christian.
You have no idea until you see this building. No.
Okay. All right, well, send me the link.
And then after that, we're going to... chat with Andy about his Roman fork.
I thought you were going to talk Commodore Rob about his Roman fork.
15 mil.
6 mil.
No.
6 mil Roman fork. Would you not be like yay tall?
I feel sorry. I do actually feel really sorry. Even though Andy's a dentist, I do feel genuinely sorry for him. Although, and I don't like dentists.
He did say you remind him of Laurence Olivier in Marathon Man.
No. He didn't say I did. I think he reminds me. Yes. I never said that, Andy. I never said that.
I thought all said that. Dentists remind
you
of that.
Do you want this to be painful or more painful? No, sorry.
But what we're going to be doing with this is, you're going to be working with myself and Jerry first for the pilot episodes of this.
Yeah.
But the third one is going to most likely be with Andy.
Yeah, I'm going to drag him over to us.
Yeah. And
I'll get gas.
What we're going to do is we're going to get some interviews of the stages of designing your dream piece of terrain. Now, Jerry and Ben have both done a video introducing the entire series, so keep your eyes peeled for that.
Mm-hmm. Good luck, editors.
They've also filmed Jerry's stage 2 for Rorke's Drift, because we've already essentially done the stage 1, me and you did.
Yeah, we did.
And we filmed myself and Ben's stage 1.
Was that when we played the joke on Warren that it was a 5-hour video?
Yes, and he went, what?
That was funny. By the time they've cut it down,
seeing his
15
face,
minutes.
I thought he was going to explode just a little bit.
That was so funny.
Lots of cool stuff coming from Foreground in the future. Ben, our Ben, Beast of War Ben, is there a terrain that you would maybe want made by Foreground? Any ideas?
Oh, I don't know.
Say
I,
Battle
I'd love
Kiwi.
I'd love to have something done a little bit for, because I'm getting into Rangers of Shadow Deep at the moment, so maybe some kind of castle structure could be pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's
like that. That'd be pretty cool. Or some catacombs or something. Yeah. That could be good.
Okay, so it's Jerry, me, Ben, Andy. I kid.
I thought you were talking about what's the next designer we're working with. You know, we're just finalising things now with the Battle Kiwi.
They do some lovely stuff.
And it means, again, that you will be able to get their stuff from not just New Zealand, but from any retailer of Foreground products will actually carry them.
Yeah.
So ask. If you know that Foreground's doing something and your local retailer doesn't have it, then please ask, because we have very good distributor coverage with our distributor partners throughout the known world.
That'll be interesting, because there's some spectacular designers out there.
Oh, yeah, there are.
And the likes of Knights of Dice.
CNC Workshop.
Knights of Dice in Australia and Battle Kiwi in New Zealand. And you look at
Laser Card in South Africa. There's brilliant people I'd love to work with.
But whenever you actually look at what you would be getting through the post, it is essentially a block of wood.
Yeah.
And that's not cheap.
No.
And it's
especially if it's coming from as far away as like New Zealand or South Africa.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest problem I think sometimes people have is, I mean, we've had to go to the expense of getting more machines, employing more people, training people up,
good
and all that kind
have.
Of thing. And so,
I don't know, you've met Luke.
We try and keep him away from places that actually sell alcohol. Of course, with Jerry, it's totally pointless.
We agreed but never to talk about that again.
Other than that, yes, they have a good happens, relationship.
What happens
with each
at
other.
Salute stays at Salute.
Yeah. Well, as Luke would say, 20 quid is 20 quid. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So there's lots of people with really good design. You know, I can even think of Iron Mammoth as well. Who's a lecturer, I believe.
Black Sight Studios.
I like those in America.
You've got the guys from Black Spiral who do the gorgeous, gorgeous dice towers.
There's loads of really good designers out there. And the thing is, they don't even have to be, you know, have to have a portfolio, if you like, at the moment. They just have to be, you know, we can, as long as we know they have the skill.
Mm-hmm. Soap Dodger.
Sorry, you're calling me something I just
Soap Dodger on the site has done some tremendous stuff in laser cut that he does for himself. So like Infinity, and he's popped up on some of the foreground terrain challenges.
I remember.
He's even did, there was like a shell of a building that you could put your own sort of wooden planks and stuff on for post-apocalyptic. So you actually built the structure and then went, what do I want on fronting these? Yeah. And the amount of people looking at it going, I really want that. You know, Soap Dodger.
Anyway, that's the latest stage that we've gone through. Mm-hmm. With the 3D printing technology that we're working with at the moment, we hope at Salute to be able to show people where traditional sculptors have sculpted something, and then we'll be able to show what we would then, we then scan that to create the file.
Yep.
And then from that, they will then get their original back, they get their computer file back. And I think I'm right in saying, CAD, we would even actually plate set it, because I know you guys have been talking about plate setting with 3D printers, because you just got into this.
Warren has got into it, and I've been kind of, you know, dragged along by the armpits into it. But I'm
not one of them, Justin. Who's going to man it, Warren? so we're doing that, and that's interesting because we're working now with guys because like me, I mean, I started off, I do 2D design. I still do 2D design. Mm-hmm. I still visualize a lot of it in my own head. Mm-hmm. Kev and Andy were taught the same way, and that's really, really helpful. But I know now that there are an awful lot of really good designers out there who can still sculpt in the same way they always have, and they've got these tools in front of them, their hands, to be able to sculpt, but then this latest job, they have to be able to do it as a file that can be sent to somebody, and hopefully by us offering this facility, it means that you know, because it's not quite your 2 quid scanning kind of on your phone kind of thing that's going on. So hopefully they'll be happy, have a happy representation.
And then Justin can know everyone has a piece of tackle.
Nice.
I'm not talking about this. I'm not entering into your under
below the belt conversation.
Yes.
All right. Here's one for you, Ben. I'm actually quite curious about this, because if you're taking a traditional sculpted model...
Is he going under the belt again? Because I refuse to...
If you're taking a traditional sculpted model, scanning it into essentially an STL file, can you then make regular adjustments from an editing program after that?
So once it's come in, depending on the program that you use, the thing is, the only trouble is then if they want to make adjustments to it, is you're talking about then getting another... sculptor, a 3D sculptor involved.
Yeah, to actually use it in ZBrush or whatever.
So what, and also the other thing is that we still recommend the 3UP. So you know how the original 3UP was made, and then they used the little pantograph thing to actually route out with it. Well, it's the same for scanning.
It could enable you to engineer it. So when a model gets engineered, that's when it's cut down so it can go in molds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you can do that. You can do the engineering side. Mm-hmm. But like, and
once you remove something that was never made, and the void there, it won't look like the... So what we say is, you know how... but you know how a plastic set is made?
Yeah.
You can do that sometimes, can't you? Where the arms can go onto...
It's like a jigsaw.
Yeah, you merge it a bit more, otherwise you can sometimes end up with really bulky shoulders.
Well, it's one of the reasons why the old Space Marines were very...
just across the body.
All of them had that.
Don't rubbish anything that I cherish, please.
I love the old Space Marines.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with them.
Beakies?
Beakies.
Yeah.
RB01.
RB. Yeah. Rogue Trader.
They've been cheesy in name. We actually found out Jerry is a great translator for myself on CAD because you're pretty much equidistant in age group between the two.
I speak fluent nerd in both directions.
So he actually speaks in the true language of the nerd and the corrupted modern version.
And by modern, we mean people post-mid-30s.
People who go and get a job for Games Workshop and when they're asked, oh, what is the most recent Games Workshop game you played? This is years ago, and Cad said, Dark Future, wasn't it?
Yeah, I played it that weekend.
And they said, we don't have a game.
Yeah.
And the area manager said...
What is the game you've played most recently that's made by Games Workshop? Dark Future. I played it that weekend.
Because my dad's a saddo.
And the local manager went, we don't make a game called Dark Future. Yeah. And the area manager did have to correct him.
What's Speed Freaks like? I haven't actually looked into Speed
Freaks. It's actually not bad. It's not bad. There's some nice models in it and a decent rule set that you can have some laughs with.
I really want to
think of a stripped down version of Gaslands.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right.
Yeah.
I really want to play Rogue Trader.
Yes.
The original.
No. I can play the original anytime I like, but the new box.
Oh, there's a new box. Okay.
What's the new
box? Kill Team Rogue Trader.
Now I understand what you're on about. And,
yes. Sorry.
Ben, you have a box sitting out there.
Yeah, I know you do.
It's the last one.
No.
That and the one behind
it. The thing is that it's all very well known.
Only one left.
Ah, the trouble with young children these days is they don't know what it was like in the old days. Is I do know what it was like in the old days, and I don't want to know it's been corrupted. But having said that, this game here is absolutely fantastic.
We're really enjoying it,
aren't we? Really?
Yeah.
Well, then, after playing against CAD, I have went out and just went, okay, give it a battle group.
Yeah, I'd hate to think it got overloaded though in the future because that's
no.
Yeah.
Anyway,
moving on.
Yes, moving on. So, we actually
have blameless.
No, our Ben has been quiet for quite some time. So Ben, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll let you talk because we have our first feature. So myself and John have sat down with D.F. Taylor because his new book Armies and Legions and Hordes is about to hit retail. So
well done, dude.
We'll be right back
and check out the John.
Hey everybody, I am joined in the studio by John and D.F. Taylor himself, the master, the mighty, the man who wrote Armies and Legions and Hordes.
Yep.
So what are we here to talk about?
Well, we're here to talk about
Armies and Legions and Hordes.
Funny that. We're here to talk about the book. This amazing book.
Yes.
But Dave has some news for us that I think he should be allowed to say because it's his book.
Okay, so. Dave?
Is this the news about giving away a couple of copies of it?
Well, that's a kind of news, and I will take that kind of news every day of the week.
Fantastic. No, there's been lots of great support from the Beasts of War on Tabletop community. So, I thought I would offer up a couple of copies of Armies and Legions and Hordes to go out to somebody who randomly comments on this video, I guess.
Awesome. Yep. Awesome.
Is that
awesome.
The way we usually do it?
Sort of. I'm sure we'll clarify that.
Warren will sort it at the start of this video.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, Dave, a few questions that spring to mind for me then. So you ran a Kickstarter campaign to create this book. How did you find the experience of working through a Kickstarter campaign?
It was pretty amazing, honestly. I went into this, I wanted to create a book that didn't exist in the marketplace at all. A book about helping people with their project management for painting toy soldiers, really. So there's a lot of great books out there, and there's a lot of great videos and Patreon accounts and that sort of thing for people who are teaching people how to paint. But there's not a lot that talks about how to sustain it across a whole army. So I wanted to do that kind of thing. I had no idea what sort of response I'd get. So I talked to a lot of people before the campaign. When the campaign started, things went gangbusters and all funded very quickly, and then just continued to grow over the course of the month of the campaign. So it was that classic trope of a roller coaster ride of emotions. Something you'd wake up in the morning, you go, "Wow, this is fantastic! Oh, something's gone wrong! Oh, this is fantastic again!" So. It was a lot of fun, but it really, at the end of it, I was very excited to get started on the book, and get to work on it. So I got to thank all of my backers for that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Like words, John?
Huh? Yeah, words. Sorry. I'm just... every time I talk to Dave, I'm just a little starstruck, right? Just shut up. So the next question I want to pose then is, how was the writing and creative process? Now, I know you coordinated with a lot of other people that contributed to the book. Was that like herding cats at all, Dave? Or how did you find the actual putting together of all the creative writing part?
To be honest, it was... It wasn't too tough because, as you say, I had a few other people involved. One of them was yourself.
It was.
Thank you very much. So it's funny that you couldn't use the words to talk, but you were able to write some wonderful inspiration. So I think I picked a good group of people. So it was yourself, there's a buddy of mine, Joel Moon, who wrote a piece on planning. My friend Ash Barker wrote a piece on aims. And also Mel Bowes, another mate of mine, the terrain tutor, wrote a great piece on terrain collections. So getting material from you four guys was not tough at all. The thing that I found hardest was actually the front section of the book. I've got about 50 pages that goes through talking about inspiration, aims, expectations, plan, motivation, and triumph are the things that I did. I did a bit of a tester for this a couple of years ago now, I guess 18, 20 months ago, actually on the Beast of War site. I wrote an article series. So I had a lot of points sort of ready to go, but I became very worried that I wasn't stringing them together well enough. Mm-hmm. So that was the section that I rewrote. I sat down and talked to my editor about it, and we went through ideas to make sure it did flow very well and show that while everything was interconnected, it was important to reference each piece separately as well. So for me, that was the toughest part. Everything else, all the features, or if you're looking at the book as like a project management book, they're kind of case studies. Each of those case studies was a lot easier to write for me because it was 6 or 8 pages or 10 pages on a particular feature where I could focus it back to either inspiration or to motivation or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dave, one thing I'm curious about is the production aspect of it, because it's great whenever you've got everything's being created,
you know,
all the backers are jumping in going, this looks amazing. But eventually you have to get down to brass tacks and actually create a physical product. Mm-hmm. So what was that experience like?
That was, it was pretty crazy, I will admit. I've been working in with print sort of products for a long time, in that I've been able to create the files that then go off to be printed. But most of those there's been somebody else that I've been working with that has handled that section of it. Mm-hmm. So because I was working with it on such an important project to me, it was very interesting. There are a few surprises. There are things that I wasn't expecting. But on the whole, I mean, the printers that I worked with in Lithuania were fantastic. I knew that they were going to create a quality product. They're the same folks who do the printing, I think, for the Flames of War books. So I know that the quality was going to be great. It was just, there are a few things along the way that I sort of hadn't expected, I guess. Mm-hmm. So something like the slipcase covers, for example.
Yeah.
I originally had a plan for how much they were going to cost. It turned out they were more expensive than I was expecting. Mm-hmm. And they took, it's one of those things you can project how thick a book is going to be. The printers can do that because they print a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And so they plan for the size of the slipcase, because obviously the book has to slide into the slipcase. Yes. Until you have the actual book finished and bound, you can't be certain. Mm. So the slipcase printing, which I assumed would happen at the same time as the book printing, was actually occurred after the books were printed.
Yeah.
So it slowed the ability to sort of ship out to to all the backers. It was just a delay that I wasn't expecting, but yeah, I'm super happy with how the slipcases came out.
And oh, it is gorgeous.
Yeah,
it's very definitely the book that I wanted to that I imagined holding when I first started the project. So
no, when it arrived here and I seen the slipcase, I was like, oh, I didn't know that it was coming with this, but yeah, this is gorgeous.
Well, I mean, like I remember you opening that box, John, and there was such a little, you know, just.
I immediately skipped to my section and read it.
Yeah, well, you took a moment to find it though, because you were like, "Where am I? Am I here?"
I was blown away that I hadn't seen all the names that had been involved.
Yeah,
I mean, particularly the foreword from Dan Abnett. I mean, that was a gorgeous little start to the book. That was amazing, and I felt really awkward that my name was in amongst all these big names as like Terrain Shooter and Dan Abnett and stuff, and I was sat there going, not sure about this anymore.
What, do you think someone's going to pick up the book and go, it's lovely stuff, but who the hell's this John Lyons guy?
Yeah, who the hell's this John guy? Whatever.
Can't write with class. No, it was absolutely fine. It was very cool. I've known Dan now for about 20 years since I started working on armies based on the very first Gaunt's Ghost stories. Mm-hmm. We met at a games day one year, and we've just sort of been talking very infrequently, sort of every now and again. When I was like, okay, I'm going to have a book where 30, 40 pages of it are going to be armies based on all of the Gaunt's Ghost stories.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll hit up Dan and see if he'd be interested in writing the foreword for it. And his response was, Dave, I have a policy. I don't promote Kickstarters. I don't back Kickstarters. I don't have anything to do with Kickstarters. And I was like, oh. So I thought about it. It's like, well, actually, the cool part would just be having the foreword in there. So I don't need to use it as a promotional tool. I don't need to go, hey, everybody, go and back Dave's Kickstarter. Yeah. It was just, so I was able to say, actually, imagine the book isn't going to Kickstarter. if this fails and I never release it, nobody will ever need to have known that you had anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. So, so Dan was like, oh, okay, in that case, that sounds fine.
Yeah. So it.
And he just wrote a fantastic foreword for me, so I was stoked with that.
Dan is one of my favorite writers from Black Library. Gaunt's Ghost was one of the first novel series I actually dove into to get into the 40K universe. Larkin. I still love you, man.
Yep, absolutely.
So, obviously, because this was like your first big production thing that went through Kickstarter and that sort of stuff, the lessons you learned during the production of that, are you going to be able to apply those to something in the future, perhaps?
I think I've become very... during the process, the whole thing has been very exciting, interesting. I've learned a lot of things that along the way. And I'd really like, it'd be kind of a waste if I didn't go back and apply them to future projects.
Yep.
So I'm really excited to do that. And there's part of me that at some point is like, maybe you should just become a publisher, Dave. Mm-hmm. Work with other people and other people who do fantastic stuff in the miniature wargaming hobby and create books with them and see how that goes. The success of this project has come to a point where it's like, okay, well, maybe I can try something different and have a lot of fun working on projects with other people. So, yeah, I have a few thoughts. I'm talking to a few different people about some projects. But the big one that we've got, it's the first one that's going to sort of hit the world, is coming up in a few weeks. I think about 2.5-3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
We're going to do launch another Kickstarter campaign. I won't talk about it too much because I think Mel is coming to see you guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I don't want to steal all of Mel's thunder.
Why do I get the feeling Warren has been making plans with Mel and we're just going to find out whenever he turns up the studio and goes, hi guys, let's film.
Oh, I didn't surprise you. I hope not. So Mel Bowe is the terrain tutor. I've known Mel for about 10 years now.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I love about Mel's approach to terrain building is he is always willing to experiment to try things out. And it's not just, okay, I'm going to do this one way, and if it works, great, I'm going to stop at that point, and I'm just going to use this as my method. Mm-hmm. He'll experiment and he'll try like three or four or five or six different ways to do something until he finds the pros and cons for all of them. Mm-hmm. So him being able to take his experience in terrain building, he's been doing it for a long time.
Oh, long time.
I mean, he's doing the Terrain Tutor YouTube channel for about 5 years now, but he's been building terrain for 40.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to work with him and create a really cool book, we're going to call it Terrain Essentials.
Cool.
So it'd be a nice sort of core volume with all the, it'd be like, we're talking about it, it's really like a workbench book. So you have it to the side there if you're working on some terrain, some sort of modeling, then and you're like, oh, what should I do here? You have a quick flick over, check out the way that Mel's approached it, and move on from there. Yeah. So, yeah, pretty excited about that. It's gonna be very cool.
It sounds really, really useful. I mean, like the number of times I've been working on a bit of a project and I've hit like a roadblock where I need to do something, and I'm just like, how do I do that? And then I have to go away and either research online or, you know, go to YouTube, or actually just, you know, let my brain slip into gear after maybe a half hour and a, you know, a couple of energy drinks.
Sure. Yep.
All right. Well, Dave, so Armies and Legions and Hordes is now coming to retail. Yeah.
That's correct.
So what is there going to be any differences versus the Kickstarter version of the book?
The only difference, I'm going to reach back here because I have a copy handy. So this is the Kickstarter version.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the slipcase, we have the book itself.
Yes.
So this is the Kickstarter version.
Mm-hmm.
This is the retail version.
Ah, so
the,
I see.
It doesn't have the slipcase, but everything else, the book is identical. All of the information is the same.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the slipcase was a nice sort of exclusive for Kickstarter backers.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but the book itself, all of the information, the material is exactly the same.
Cool. And do you have a rough idea of when that's going to drop for folks?
It's actually available now in from websites like warlordgames.com.
Mm-hmm.
So for folks in the UK and Europe, you're going to be your quickest bet. It's available now from ironheartartisans.com in the US. So if you want to get it online, you can get it from those folks.
Mm-hmm.
For friendly local game stores, in the UK, Europe, anybody who sort of picks stuff up directly from Warlord, they can order it from them.
Yep.
Or in the US, for friendly local game stores, stores that order from Alliance Game Distributors, it will be available from them in March.
Awesome. Well, if it's all the Warlord stuff, maybe actually swing by their stand at Salute, and maybe if they're at Adepticon.
Yep, at Adepticon, actually over here at Adepticon and some of the HMGS East shows, so Cold Wars, mm-hmm. Historicon, and Fallen, it'll be at those shows with Winged Hussar Publishing. Oh. So my buddy Vince is doing those.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Well, Dave, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Always a pleasure to catch up with you. Long may your publishing success continue. This, as a first, you know, offering, is a piece of gorgeous work. I highly recommend it to anybody out there who is like myself and has huge collections. And yeah, you get maybe a little bit of paralysis whenever you realize you've got like 4,000 points of Space Marines you now need to paint.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the book that can help folks get past those roadblocks, whatever they might be. There's loads of different ideas in there on how to sort of progress and get past those things that might be sort of catching you up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everybody, don't forget, get your comments in below for your chance to win one of two copies of Armies and Legions and Hordes. Myself, John, and Dave will move on. We'll see you again soon. From what I hear from John, it was a very cool experience working to actually figure out what he actually wanted to show Dave in that book for his sort of inspirational side of things.
Yeah. Is he getting a percentage of the gross?
No. He just gets the gross.
Oh, that's all right then.
Well, he got a free copy.
That'll do.
That's not bad. Not bad.
That'll do.
Yeah, that'll do, pig.
It is interesting to hear that Dave is planning to make more books and work with other, you know, creatives within the industry to actually give you more different sort of angles and avenues for things that you maybe wouldn't really think of.
Well, he's got some good heritage in the industry anyway.
Yeah.
You know, that he's He's ploughing his own furrow now. Yeah. But,
and in case you three
he used
don't
to
know,
plough somebody else's.
In case you three don't know, and in case anybody skipped over the end of that one, we are actually giving away 2 copies of Armies and Legions and Hordes.
3, if I can find where John's put his.
He took it home
in my
with
bag.
Him.
Oh, right.
Just 2 then.
One's been claimed, sorry. All right, so it's time to move on to the news. And Ben, I did promise we would let you have get a word in edgewise here. So what in the hell has been going on in the world?
Cool, yeah. So the first piece of news that we're going to be looking at is from the guys at the Ministry of Gentlemanly Warfare. Now, these are the guys that have done games in the past, like Blood Eagle, which was very, very good. Yeah. And they were actually showing off this game called Thud and Blunder back last year at Salute. They had a couple of demo tables, but this year should see the release of the game properly. So this is going to be a new sort of fantasy skirmish game that they've put together, which takes a lot of the mechanics from Blood Angel and sort of reinvents them in a new way to make them easy and sort of quick to dive into for young players, and also deep enough for older players as well, which I thought was really cool. A little bit like what we're seeing with a lot of other games at the moment, it's trying to be sort of open source when it comes to its miniatures, so you can use whatever the hell you've got in your collection, dig out some of those old ones. Like, we had an article this week about dusting off old miniatures. Mm-hmm. This would be a perfect opportunity to do that kind of thing. It's a big campaign narrative scenario based game. You can do dungeon delving, you can do traditional sort of Mordheim stuff where you've got warbands leveling up as you go through. There's a little bit of role playing in there as well, which I think is really cool, and it's effectively a nice little toolbox for you to use when it comes to fantasy wargaming. So if you're one of those people that's, you know, picking up a whole bunch of random fantasy stuff right now, this is another option for you to go and potentially check out.
It's also also another example for people to be able to use, you know, all those Kickstarter games where you've got fantastic miniatures,
exactly,
and now nobody's playing that game.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, you can.
It is a problem we've seen with some Kickstarters because the production time is so long. You get all this big hype during the Kickstarter, and then you're waiting and waiting, and the bubble gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Are you talking about Fabled Realms?
No! I love that game.
What a low blow.
Oh, I can't believe it.
I think they're all set up,
Ben. Ben, if we ever are out in America together, we're never going to a shooting range, okay? Because this would be you with a gun. This would be your foot.
I don't mind talking about stuff.
The Ministry of the Gentlemanly Warfare, they're also the guys that did the Osprey steampunk game. I can't remember the name of the game.
Google.
Was it In Her Majesty's Name?
Yeah.
And they also did the Japanese game as well.
Yes, and Ronin. I think they did Ronin.
Ronin, mm. Yeah.
Haisho, I think, was another one.
Oh, no, it could be Haisho.
Well.
So, yeah, they're very good. I remember those games. I really enjoyed. Yeah.
See, I like games like this because it gives me a reason to go out and look at some fantasy miniatures and I go, it's lovely, but am I ever going to get it on the table?
That's exactly
And
it.
This is what it gives me is, I like it, and I've got this to put it on the table.
There's going to be some interesting things happening at Salute this year. As I say, like, these guys are obviously going to have potentially Thud and Blunder there for you to go and play and demo again, which is really cool. They had a lot of younger players sitting out to play the game, which I thought was a really nice thing to see. Mm-hmm. But also, you've got there's another company whose name I think they're called Oakbound Studios, and they're bringing out a skirmish game called The Woods, which is set in sort of Dark Age, fey folklore times back in sort of like Albion back in those mystical eras. So go and have a look for that one as well.
I thought we were going to have to reset the Burrows and Badgers clock.
No, and I was going to just say that there's also a little small company in Nottingham with Rick Priestley, I think his name is. They brought out quite a nice little. I hope it works for them. I mean, this young lad Rick, he seems to.
He's up and coming.
He's got a good idea. Yeah,
this could turn out to be one to watch in future.
He could.
Priestley Esquire.
Was it Robert Priest Hammer? Something like that. But anyway, I imagine that. Something rather exciting. No, I don't imagine, actually, because I've already been licking the pages. Sorry. Moving on.
Licking or looking at?
Licking
or looking at?
Licking.
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 That'll explain a lot.
When my lads were younger, they used to try and say that they had to buy it. You know the thing where you open the box? If you've opened the box, you have to buy it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying which one, but one of them decided that if they licked the cling film, kind of shrink wrap on the outside, that I then had to buy it. And I was in such hysterics that it wasn't very hard for me to say no, but I was really in hysterics. So there you go. So now we talk about licking the box.
It's
mine now.
Well, there is the thing. Licking dicks. Things to claim them as your own. Yeah. Have you done that, Ben?
No, I tend to do it with cupcakes.
Okay, food at works. But it works. Okay, what else do we have in the news?
So we actually got two game announcements from Mythic Games as well. They were at the Cannes Festival, and they were talking about all the new games that they've been working on, obviously Solomon Kane, Wright Brothers, and all that kind of thing. And they actually announced two new games, as I was saying. The first of these is called Super Fantasy Brawl, and this is the one that I'm a lot more interested in. So this one is one that's very different from anything they've done before. It's a sort of like loose hero brawler that you play on the tabletop. It's like a proper board game. You can choose heroes from whichever factions you want. There's no factions, as it were, but you can choose heroes and mash them together to create a whole bunch of different combinations, and then you fight it out on the tabletop, and it's all card-driven combat, which is also a big plus in my opinion, and it will all end up with a cool sort of organized play game that they're trying to get to the tabletop. I like the artwork for this. They were talking about it with a couple of guys at Essen last year, which is pretty cool, and it's nice to see things have expanded from there. They've done a couple of interviews talking about it as well over the past couple of weeks. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with this one, and it'll be on Kickstarter at some point this year as well.
But it's so very cool. World of Warcraft-y. Like, yes. The artwork.
It's kind of got... the game that replaced Dota? No. League of Legends?
Just play with them.
Well, I mean, that's one of the interesting things about this. Like, as I say, there's no factions in this game, so any hero can fight alongside any hero. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this balances out when it comes to organized play and all that kind of thing. They've also said that they have some interesting plans going forward for that as well. So they want to make sure that there's regular hero releases, regular updates, regular tournament stuff for that as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing some actual gameplay of it, because it seemed to have captured a lot of the attention of the Mythic guys last year. So,
yeah. See, I like card-driven games because it kind of drops some of the randomness from, you know, attacks and things. If you've been lucky, got a decent hand, or you've worked your hand so you've got enough gas in the tank, you can really go to town on someone, which is just a lot of fun.
Says King Alpha Strike.
Why is it King Alpha? Hang on, here's a question for you. Why is enjoying playing hardcore gaming making you an Alpha Striker?
Because that's exactly what it is.
Pretty much the definition. Yeah. But is there anything wrong with that? Not at all. No. Not at all. If you don't want to play that kind of game and the person knows it, they'll just say what kind of game that they want.
Yeah.
I think where you have a problem is where people, and I think this is could be a hot topic in some ways, sometimes people can't moderate the way they play for the people that they're playing with. And I think it's really...
There was only that one time that I stamped on Adam.
No, there was just...
That's the kind of game I hate. I hate steamroller games.
Twilight Imperium, a decade ago. If you don't stop manipulating them, I'm going to push your head through the wall.
Really?
That's the way he spoke to his father.
6 hours.
Yeah. I was actually influencing that game perhaps a little bit too much, but hey-ho, that's why. I mean, you know, there are some games where...
I'm guessing there's a big stick and a pot.
Yeah, I had the whole galaxy to do it with.
Well, that might be an interesting... and another one of the games that Mythic Games actually announced might be interesting to those kind of people that like a little bit of table talking back and forth, and it's called Hell, The Last Saga. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be another one of their big board games, a little bit like Solomon Kane and all the things they've been working on as well. And this is a game
Scandinavian Hell.
So it's set during the period of, I think it's 999 AD. And it's when the old pagan ways are fading away and the Christianity is coming to the fore, and you play a group of survivors, as they're called, who are looking for effectively the Christian afterlife, a little bit of heaven, and also Viking Valhalla. However, they find themselves in what amounts to hell. And so you then have to survive in this horrible landscape, dealing with food, keeping everybody alive and all that kind of thing. But the twist of this as well is there's actually a semi-cooperative aspect to the game as well. So as well as being able to try and keep the group alive and focus towards that end goal, you're also trying to complete your own personal goals at the same time. Yeah. So it's all about sort of how you want to measure that, and sort of whether or not you want to backstab somebody and sort of go your own way as well. But obviously, if you're going to try and do it all by yourself, you might not survive against the monsters and all horrible things.
Is that Andy Sek next to the person with the eagle?
Possibly.
Really nice miniatures.
The miniatures are gorgeous.
Really nice.
It's one thing I've come to expect from the guys at Mythic. They just have a really clean, crisp art style that they always go for, and they translate it to miniature beautifully every single time.
Every time.
Yeah, if you want to learn a little bit more about these, we've put some those new story together, so you can have a proper read of what we talked about and what was revealed at Cannes this year as well, which is pretty cool. But I'm looking forward to it. And this is, again, another Kickstarter that they're doing this year, so watch out for that one. So, yeah.
She deserves whatever she comes across.
Really?
With her Christian cross in the Scandinavian hell. So I don't care. No, if it's a terrible place, love, I think you'll find you brought it on yourself. 6 hours
later. Yeah, so the last piece of news we're going to be looking at for today is from the guys at Wizards of the Coast. They announced their newest source book, which is going to be coming out called... I can't remember what it's called now.
Ghosts of Saltmarsh. I'm
completely bamboozled now, but it's called Ghosts of Saltmarsh. And this is a new book which will have a whole bunch of different adventures for characters going from level 1 all the way through to level 12. Ooh, and it takes a lot of existing adventures that used to exist in the first edition of Dungeons & Dragons, AD&D and all that kind of thing, and brings them back to life and plants them back into the 5th edition for you to play through again. The other cool thing as well is that while Saltmarsh itself was from the Greyhawk setting, they've actually made the new version of Saltmarsh for this setting neutral. So you can put it into whatever kind of campaign or whatever world you've built, and it will fit in with everything you're doing in 5th edition. As well as all the adventures that come in the book for you to play through, which are all those old ones, there's some new ones as well. And they've also got rules for naval combat and ships. So if you want to take to the sea and naval be a pirate, combat. You've got some options.
Sea full of vinegar sounds like to me. Lovely job.
But yeah, we actually saw there was a Critical Role is a big live stream that goes on, plays D&D. They use ships in some of their combat. And yeah, those are some of the rules that have been graduated over into here, as you can see in this book, which is pretty cool. So yeah.
Well, seeing as we're speaking of role-playing, there is one little bit of a shout-out I want to do.
Yes.
Which is there's a group, a page on Facebook I follow called Extra Credit. And they actually recently had a look at some... lesser known RPGs, and it's a fabulous watch. Go and check it out, guys.
If we're having shout outs, I'd like to shout out for Brigade Games Kickstarter that's out at the moment, and
Mr. Hex's lovely tiny fighting man.
Oh, they are, aren't they? Yeah. And I'd also like to give a shout out for Pulp Figures is bringing out a Kickstarter very, very shortly through the avenue that is Crucible Crush.
All right. I'd like to thank my mom and Elvis.
And I'd like to thank my wife.
Now, who's going to thank the Academy?
I'd like to thank, as we just mentioned, D&D, all the unironic Dark Elf Rangers that are good on the inside.
But for this, it is nice to see that they're giving you more ways to explore the world and do different things.
Yes.
So that it's not on the DM to homebrew rules for things like naval combat.
Yes. One of the interesting, it's linked, but in a different way, and we haven't actually talked about it yet on the site, but there's also going to be some work going in towards a series of books for younger gamers. So if you find that something like the Player's Handbook and the Dungeon Master's Guide and the Monster Manual are a bit too much for a lot of younger roleplay games out there, they're actually going to be bringing out a whole bunch of different books that will help guide kids into playing more roleplaying games on the tabletop, which I thought was really awesome. So
I wonder,
do you?
If... Years ago, D&D, when they were trying to launch it in Japan, they did a specifically Japanese version because they have very different ideas of things. So their elves were very much the Warcraft-style giant floppy-eared elves, and all the drawings. Yeah. And if you weren't obviously it was pre-Warcraft, so people just looked at it and went, what in the name of God is going on here? But having something that draws on that style of artwork, even though you keep all the rest of it the same, because you're not actually varying any of the background or the game mechanics, it was just the actual style of it.
The imagery of it
would be a good way to draw people in. Yeah, I wonder if that still exists out there.
Well, I'm sure it probably exists somewhere.
Yeah, but in Japanese. That
in your head.
Well, it'd also be nice.
Except for Sam.
Depending on how they do the books for children,
yeah,
it could be interesting, because one of the things with D&D is when people get given a player's handbook and they've never played before, and they're like, so I do what, and how do I, and where am I?
You're trying to work your way through it.
Yeah, we've got a friend of ours that has never played D&D before. We've got one friend.
One friend?
I have two. one of them's invisible. But
Harvey's not.
And he's never played.
I love that rabbit.
He's only just started playing games. So the first game he was playing was Spartacus, board games. And now he would like to try D&D.
I love the mechanics of Spartacus.
But... If we presented him with a player's handbook and...
Yeah, all the paraphernalia, yeah.
Have a read of that, as he's never experienced anything before. But he knows what D&D is. He's seen it in things like Stranger Things, other places. He's like, I'd like to give that a go.
But the weird thing is, especially I think because after all, we can only speak English mostly in the...
Well, I speak two languages.
Uh-huh.
English and bad English.
I thought so, yes. It's why D&D had so much traction and also, you know, Pathfinder and that kind of thing. And yet over in UK, Republic of Ireland, and many other parts of Europe where I haven't been, but I'm imagining is the case, D&D hadn't really had much of a showing for some time, and it tended to be a little bit... geeky amongst geeks, which is really hard. And
there's always that next level of
And then I think I'm really pleased that, you know, when I think didn't Waterstones pick up on magic first of all, and now they do more and more.
Well, they've got lots of like proper geeky board games.
That's right, and I think that's great
and
for
role playing games.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I think I was talking about with the group regard the D&D, and I was really really pleased whoever the guy is in Waterstones in Sheffield, when I know he was talking to a new person who was just getting into D&D. You know, they'd done the Games Workshop stuff and then they went over to Waterstones and they had a look at that. And I just think that if you've got members of staff that are prepared to engage with the customers, then, you know,
very cool.
Yeah. Can I have a free book now from
No, but I think that does wrap us up for the news, unless we have anything else, Ben.
No, that's the last bit,
All right, so we're going to break away for our next feature, which is another one of our friends from the industry. We have Colin from Battle Systems Inn talking about what they're looking to do in the near future for their terrain.
Those bad boys. Was it painted fingernails or something? He'll be able to let you know. And wonder pants or something. I remember being told about it. Painted man. Pink fingernails.
Hi, everybody. I'm back with Colin from Battle Systems, and today we're having a bit of a chat about what they're going to be doing in the future. Because this is something I love hearing, because it's always nice to see the progression of where a company's going. So what have you got in mind?
Okay, well, one of the first projects that we did was the fantasy range. Mm-hmm. That was really, really popular. We did like a dungeon and a castle that we could, you know, put together. Since then we've done urban and we've done loads of sci-fi and all sorts of things. Everyone's screaming at us like, you know, fantasy, you know. We've got this, you know, we've had this great fantasy terrain, which is just, you know, so popular there's just none left. So we're gonna focus now on expanding our two largest range. So we're gonna do a bit more sci-fi, but we're gonna focus on the fantasy as well. So that's where we're gonna head, straight into the fantasy.
Okay. Important question then. Which sort of route are you planning to take it to market with? Are you going Kickstarter? Are you going direct release?
Okay, so we're gonna go for Kickstarter, certainly. You know, we're still small enough to need the support of everybody to help us. And anybody that knows us, the how we run Kickstarters is that often a lot of the ideas and the design focus comes whilst we're running the actual Kickstarter itself. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in there having the comments, people are making suggestions, and more often than not a lot of those turn up whilst the Kickstarter is running. I spend
so like you're frantically drawing out new buildings.
I'll do it, design it, prototype it, build it, and have a photo, you know, within a few days. So that's how we do it. It's a crazy way to do it. It's ridiculous, but that's how we do it. So we're gonna launch that on Kickstarter. We're gonna just go mad.
The question then becomes, what side of the fantasy world are you going to be looking at? Because you've got your dungeon, you've got your castle. Where would you go now?
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to focus on the, you know, the more sort of external external buildings, tabletop terrain, so that you've, you know, a lot of people have got their big table and they just want to fill it with really cool buildings and things like that. So that kind of Tudor villagey house kind of thing, which can be used for so many different games, whether you're playing, like, you know, Fantasy Battle, or you're having a kind of a, you know, you play Malifaux, or, you know, just so many different environments to explore. Mm-hmm. And I think a really nice, a full table, you know, something really big, you know, 6x4 kind of table, full of enough to just be, you know, to say, here's my pledge, we're going to fill this with all this lovely terrain, and that'll fill my table up nicely, thank you very much. And of course, all those buildings, because it's Battle Systems, all those buildings will be able to, they will be strong, so that you know, if you drop them, they're not going to fly they'll bounce, they're not going to fly into a million pieces. And you'll be able to go inside those buildings as well, because that's really important to us. So we're really going to open up your gaming table.
The next thing I'd wonder about. Now, I know you guys love doing modular stuff, but are you going to go for a bit more style over function, or
So basically, all of our terrain today is fully modular. Yeah. I mean, you can do literally anything with it. Mm-hmm. Now, when you go external buildings, you certainly, if you're going to have to tackle something like a, you know, a fantasy house or, you know, like a tavern or whatever, mm-hmm. you're going to need some very, very bespoke parts to that.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do, it's still going to be modular, but we're going to focus on the fact that we're going to make sure that these houses look amazing.
Yeah.
And so you might be able to take a couple of houses and say, well, what I can do, I can take these two houses and kind of merge them so they kind of fit into a slightly bigger house and stuff like that.
Modular by level though?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very early days at the moment. Mm-hmm. I've got some pretty cool designs and I'm trying to just make sure it works the best possible. But yeah, it should look stunning. You can go into every single building and well, there'll be ruins and it's all about the scatter for us. So you can expect all the furniture. All the furniture and, you know, the little cart outside and, you know, the wooden bridge and all that kind of stuff, you know. So you can really have a table that just sucks you straight in immediately. Yeah.
Okay, so fantasy, you're covered.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are the sci-fi lovers out there getting some love too?
Absolutely, yeah. Now, again, we're known for our internal sci-fi and we've got a lot of it. If you want to battle inside a space station or something like that, we've got you covered. However, big tables, six foot by 4 foot or something like that, and you want to stick your 40K on there, you know, you're going to want your gothic ruins, you're going to want all of your really cool sort of mech kind of buildings, and you're going to want you're going to want that big environment. Mm-hmm. And the same thing applies. If we're going to have a building there, you'll be able to lift it off and go straight inside, continue the battle inside, which would be really cool.
Yeah. Now, you see, I love this idea of doing like huge table packs because I think they could come in really handy for like tournament organizers.
Sure, absolutely.
Because what they could do is they could take maybe a couple or three of those big packs and split them out. Now, I know you'll probably hate this, but it's what you get some tournament players do. They'll put six bits of terrain down.
Yeah.
But they could split it out across a bunch of tables.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Without a doubt, yeah. I mean, you know, we're hoping to offer quite a lot in one table full of terrain.
Yeah.
So, often, I mean, a bit like a set like we've got on the table here at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is not a full, this is not what you get in the box. This is about 2/3 of what actually comes in a set. So, you know, whatever's left over, I could use to expand this, or I could put it on another table, you know. Yeah. So, should be very flexible in that respect.
Well, you see, I like the idea of it because it's something that I've seen tournament organizers struggle with for years with big heavy duty terrain, you know, like resin cast, big plastic kits.
Yep.
It's a lot of kit to run about with.
Yeah.
With this, you bring it along, it's all nicely flat packed down, you've got some pre-built sections.
Absolutely.
And everything fits inside it so you can store it.
Totally.
And then you can lay out your tournament really, really quickly for folks.
Without a doubt. I mean, everything that you've got, you know, miniatures aside, everything you've got on this table here fits in a, you know, really quite a small little, I've got this little plastic container. It's like an A5 container and all the walls flat packed. Yeah, pretty much, yeah. and I literally just pack the walls together, chuck elastic band around it, the clips go in a baggie and, you know,
and off you go.
All the extra little bits and pieces of that just go in a little baggie and that's it, job's done.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can compare that to a big plastic resin thing, you know, then you're gonna, it's night and day.
Yeah, well, I mean, like the containment of your gaming space, it's something a lot of gamers have a lot of work to do. I mean, like I have seen people do full conversions of a single room of their house, much to the distress of the missus or the other half, but they have to do this just because there's so much stuff. With your stuff, it's got that transportability and that storability.
It's a bit like with board games. Mm. You should be able to put a board game on a shelf, pull it off, play it, put it back on, it fits on its slot. Yeah. Our terrain does the same thing, basically.
Yeah.
You pack it back down, flat pack it, like I say, rubber band round it, chuck it in the box, stick it back on the shelf, and you should be able to look at your shelf and just go, hey, you know.
That's the one I want to play.
Yeah, I'm going to go for this particular set, pull it off, get it out, and when it's done, packed away, back on the shelf. You don't have wardrobes full of things that gets knocked and fallen and chipped your paint's coming off and all that nonsense. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to make you cry a little bit because it's always inspiring to hear about expansions to ranges and, you know, taking it to the next level. One thing I love doing is I love hearing from the community as to where they would love to see you take the ranges and where
you know, maybe even exploring something you've never even looked at before. Yeah. Actually hearing from them what they would like to see.
You know what? And I'll be very interested to, we're already asking out and around our community about what people want to see on the fantasy table. We're at the stage of development now where we're really just taking in ideas. And, you know, for example, when we, you know, our dungeon Kickstarter, you know, there were items that our castle came from suggestions. Our sewers came from suggestions. Yeah. You know, people wanted mines so they could have railway tracks and all stuff like that. We made it happen on the Kickstarter. I'm going to try to be a bit more proactive so that I don't nearly die this time or cut my fingers to bits trying to get it all ready. But so we're going to be a bit more proactive, and we want to know now. We want to know now what people want.
Well, for myself, there's one thing I would love to see is just like a little adventurer's camp.
Okay.
You know, so some nice little tents, a little campfire.
I can see that.
The general stuff they would bring, maybe a little cart.
Yeah, I think I've designed it.
Have you?
Yeah, just now. Yeah, I'm just thinking how I can do that with the materials that we use, and I can't see any roadblocks there. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, everybody, get your suggestions in below where you would like to see Battle Systems go with the new fantasy range that they're expanding out.
Please.
We will move on. We will see you again very soon.
Hey guys, this is Dallas from Privateer Press, and you're watching The Weekender on Beasts of War. Paint on.
After that, my family came back.
That's what Colin's up to. Hopefully you've enjoyed it.
I haven't even finished explaining it.
We've also got another one from the guys at Shadows of Brimstone.
Did you record any of that?
Hello everybody, I am joined by Scott and Jason from Flying Frog Productions, and today we're going to be having a bit of a chat about their latest Kickstarter. Hi guys, welcome to the show.
Hey. Hi. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys too. So, Flying Frog Productions, you're probably best known for Shadows of Brimstone, and you've got a new Kickstarter up and running. So, can you maybe give us a little bit of an outline of what this project's going to entail?
Sure. Yeah. So the new Kickstarter is obviously for a Shadows of Brimstone project. It's called Shadows of Brimstone Adventures, and it's for basically two brand new standalone adventure sets for Shadows of Brimstone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now for anyone who hasn't seen Shadows of Brimstone before, would you maybe like to let them know what the world is and what they're going to expect from a game like this?
Sure. So Shadows of Brimstone is basically a dungeon crawl game that's fully cooperative, and it basically all the players take on the role of different heroes and go kind of diving into a dungeon and exploring, fighting creatures, going on missions, and it has a built-in campaign system, so you actually can keep your characters from game to game. You can build up experience, go up in levels. Each hero class has kind of some unique way that they play, and they've got like a skill tree, so as you go up in levels, you can choose new skills and kind of build your character as you go and sort of guide their development.
There's a light role-play aspect where you can level up and continue your character from game to game. Mm-hmm. But really, at its heart, it's a great, you know, dungeon crawl board game with a heavy miniatures element. So we really, you know, we love the hobby game. We grew up on, you know, Games Workshop stuff, and we were really excited to share our love of that with a new audience, which is people that know us for board games. Mm-hmm. So board game audience, suddenly we're like, whoa, I have to assemble these miniatures. I can paint them. We're like, you know, painting's very fun.
Yeah.
And for a time now, we're hearing from people where they're like, oh, I bought some paints and I painted a miniature and it's so cool. And we're like, yeah.
We also have a lot of people that will tell us or post on forums that, you know, this game got me back into painting miniatures after a 20 year break.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool to make that connection with people and to, you know, pull people into trying new parts of the more hobby end of the game. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, like, it's one thing I've discussed with people many times is that the hobby is not just playing games. There are many aspects to it. So you have the build, the painting, the playing, and even down to the research into games. Because, I mean, like, people play games, and if something sparks their imagination, they're going to go off. They're going to watch documentaries. They're going to read, like, posts and stuff all across the internet to find out about the world, the era. And that's something I always find really special. Now, this Kickstarter you're launching, it's a short Kickstarter, so people don't have a lot of time to jump in, yeah?
Right. We decided our last two Kickstarters, which were our only two Kickstarters, were a month each. Mm-hmm. And we thought for this one, maybe we would do it for a shorter time span. One of the things we introduced last time was in our second Kickstarter, we did late backing, which a lot of people were begging for. And we, you know, we gave them an opportunity. And so once we were like, well, okay, you know, if it's only a 2-week window and someone misses it, they could still late pledge, and so it's not the end of the world. And so for us, we would rather run it over a more compressed span of time, because during the Kickstarter, we're just on a 24-hour schedule where we get almost no sleep, and it's a crazy, crazy, crazy time,
up all night and trying to keep everything up and running. So it's basically a 2-week project for this current Kickstarter. It launched last Saturday on the 23rd, and it basically runs through 2 weeks up until March 9th.
Mm-hmm. Well, specifically 6 p.m. March 9th Pacific Standard Time.
Okay.
For in Europe, that's actually going to be early March 10th. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the game itself, so it's a dungeon crawler, so we are expecting certain things. So fully cooperative play, you know, the classic dungeon crawl feel. Is there anything else that's coming out in the new set that's really just going to go, holy crap, wow?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely are. One of the big things is we basically have a new type of hero class that you play, which is a team hero. So in previous Shadows of Brimstone games and products, you basically, each person could choose whatever hero class they want. And, he plays a cowboy and I play a saloon girl. And we're just sort of a motley crew that goes on these adventures. Mm-hmm. And with these two new sets, they're basically kind of condensed and make it so that you play as a team. So you're all playing Vikings or you're all playing conquistadors, but you have variations amongst them. So he might be playing a Viking Jarl, who's like a big chieftain with a heavy axe and a chainmail armor. And I might play like a Huskarl, who has like the bow, is kind of an honor guard character with a sword and shield and a bow to get off quick arrows at enemies before charging into the fray. So it's kind of cool putting it a little bit on its ear and playing kind of a crack team of explorers and fighters that all have the same kind of heritage and cultural background.
Mm-hmm. And besides being just the same type of character, there's also a new thing we introduced that's a team ability. So everybody starts the game with one team ability that actually is kind of a boost for the whole team. And it's a once per adventure thing.
So there's like a deck of cards. So you can use these new heroes like Vikings or conquistadors mixed together with any of your old heroes. You can just mix them in and play one of those motley crew teams going to adventure together. But the more Vikings you play on a team, the more benefit they'll give to each other. So you have this deck of team abilities cards, and for each Viking or each conquistador on the team, they get to draw one of those cards and add it to a pool, and then you as a group decide when to use them and how to use them, and each one of those cards is like a once per adventure thing, and they benefit all Vikings or all conquistadors. Mm-hmm. And so if you have one or two conquistadors on your team mixed with other hero types, then those conquistadors will still have that little bit of kind of a buddy-buddy, we have these cards we can play, so the two of us are a team. And if you have a full team of conquistadors with three or four or five, then, you know, every single one of those team ability cards you play, the bonus just expands to affect every hero that's that type.
Very cool, very cool. Now, I'm also having a bit of a look through the Kickstarter while I'm at it here, and one thing has caught my eye, and it's left me going, ooh, I want one. You have the XL-sized Frost Giant. So am I right in assuming that you guys are actually drawing from the different mythologies of each of these, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. And there's each of those two new adventure sets also has a Kickstarter-exclusive hero that you'll get if you pledge for either of the sets. Mm-hmm. And we delve into the mythology for that. So the Vikings, you'll actually get to play as a Valkyrie warrior maiden.
Very cool.
So that's pretty cool. And then, you know, there's not a lot of mythology surrounding conquistadors. So we looked at, like, historical exploration and then kind of the mythology around that.
So for the conquistadors, the kind of Kickstarter-exclusive promo hero you get is the Cursed Eternal. And he's basically one of Ponce de Leon's crew that found the Fountain of Youth and took water from it, consumed it to get immortality, but it came at a dark price. Basically, he has a ghost blade, and he's constantly withering away. So even though he lives forever, it's in kind of a state of torment. And so he has to cut down enemies with his ghost blade and sort of steal their soul and their life essence to keep himself refreshed.
I see. It sounds as if people are going to have a lot of cool adventures to play with, because, I mean, like, with the Vikings, you've got all the old sagas that you can, you know, have a play and have a look at. And with the conquistadors, you know, there's nothing wrong with looking at, I think it's Aztec culture, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of Mesoamerican cultures that influence the mythology and whatnot. One of the other things that I don't think we touched on yet with Shadows of Brimstone is that it gives you this dungeon crawl adventure in sort of Earth-based worlds, but because it's got that unspeakable horror element, you find these swirling gateways that open up that basically lead to other worlds and other dimensions that you can step through the portal and keep adventuring on the other side. Mm-hmm. So in the game, it's all map tile based, and all the map tiles are double-sided. They've got the Earth-based world that you're playing in on one side, and then on the other side, it's a crazy alien environment that you can go exploring. And so with these two sets, in Gates of Valhalla, which is the Viking-themed set, the Earth-based world is the Norse lands. So you're running around in snowy forests and icy crags, you know, fighting trolls and frost giants and things like that. But when you step through a portal, suddenly you end up in an ancient, frozen-over alien city that's been long abandoned for millennia. And the only thing left in the city are these robotic creations that are going around keeping all the systems going and defending the city against intruders. Mm-hmm. So it gives you this this kind of cool you know, juxtaposition mm-hmm. of Vikings, who are kind of barbaric and very like kind of close combat oriented, hand-to-hand fisticuffs and axes and shields, fighting these kind of higher tech but ancient robots mm-hmm. that have, you know, ranged attacks and kind of shake up that combat a little bit.
It does sound like it's going to be a very different feel to it, because if you're rocking in with Vikings, because if a Viking sees a robot with a gun, he's not going to know it's a gun. He's just going to go, no, to Valhalla, right. Die.
Yeah. And the other fun part of that is that with the second adventure set, the Valley of the Serpent Kings, it's conquistadors exploring an abandoned Spanish fort that they lost contact with. So that's the Earth-based side of the world. So it's this sort of dark and creepy Spanish fort that, you know, there's torches burning on the walls, but there's crazy demons and creatures hiding in the shadows, you know, cults that have moved in, and, you know, undead that are crawling through the place. And when they find portals, they can step through into this swampy alien world called the Swamps of Jargono, which, of course, is overrun with tribal serpent men, who build big pyramids and you know, have archers and big temple guard and things like that. So it gives your conquistadors the opportunity to go on expeditions into the jungles that they may be familiar with, but in an alien environment that's overrun with really terrifying kind of nightmarish creatures, carnivorous plants, giant insects, and serpents.
And the thing is that each of these different worlds, not just the alien worlds, but also the Earth-based ones, has a card associated with it, a world card. Mm-hmm. And so every time you're adventuring through the dungeon and different encounter tokens that you flip over as you enter a new room, they'll show you what to expect. Like there's an encounter and there's two doors in this room. Or you're attacked by creatures and there's a portal in this room. And whenever you find one of these portals, then if you're going to go through it, you shuffle up all the world cards that you have and draw from that to tell where it leads. Mm. And you don't know. And the thing is that if you just have the Viking set, you know it leads to Targa.
The Targa Plateau, which is the frozen alien city.
Right. Mm-hmm. But if you have, say, both the Conquistador and the Viking one, then when you find one of these portals, you shuffle up all those. And so the Vikings might end up going from their Norse lands through a portal and ending up at the Spanish fort. Ooh. Or they end up in the Swamps of Jargono, or they end up in Targa Plateau.
So basically, each set on its own gives you you know, a compartmentalized experience, but the more sets you have, or the more other world expansions you have, the more places you can go, the more variation you have every time you play an adventure.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is that we've done, you know, the first Shadows of Brimstone that we introduced all this with was Old West-based. And so you start in the American Old West, and it's this gritty cowboy, you know, Clint Eastwood kind of Old West, but you end up exploring the mines, and you can find portals, and they lead to other worlds. Mm-hmm. And so we had two core sets of that, and then since then, we've released a bunch of other world expansions with alien worlds on one side and more mine stuff on the other. And then our second Kickstarter we actually did, it was called Forbidden Fortress, and the Earth-based side starts in feudal Japan. And you're playing as samurais and traveling monks and ninja assassins and sorcerers. And you can go, the other world for that one was the Belly of the Beast, it was called.
Yeah, so you find a portal that leads inside a giant living creature So as you're exploring, they're all kind of living intestine-like hallways, uh-huh. just chambers of stomachs and things like that.
And so all of these things work together. So if you have one, it's really fun. If you have two, wow, mind-blowing. You have so many more options. Mm-hmm. If you have three, four, five, six, seven, eight, it adds so much variety, but it doesn't add to the length. It adds to the depth. You know what I mean? So it gives you so much more variety for creatures you're fighting, worlds to explore, not just other worlds, alien worlds, but also different Earth-based, and even the heroes that you're using. Like Jason said earlier, you could have a mixed bag party. So, I mean, you could have, I'm like an Old West frontier doc. I went through a portal to Japan, and I hooked up with a samurai, and now the two of us went through, and we've met some Vikings, and now we're going to have a real adventure.
Now it's a party.
Hey, it's not a party until the Vikings are there.
That's right, exactly.
And, recently one of our backers during this Kickstarter actually said, I just came to the realization that Shadows of Brimstone is actually a Lego set for board gamers. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that because, you can go so many ways with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I am seeing one more box that you haven't talked about here on the Kickstarter. Terran Strike Team, what is this?
The Tredaren Strike Team. So that's an exclusive to the Kickstarter at the Warlord level. And it basically, Tredaren is one of the other worlds that we already came out with an expansion where your cowboys or your Vikings or whatever can go and explore this alien world called Tredaren. Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like an alien World War I inspired battlefield where it's trenches, tanks, gas masks, tank traps and rockets and bombs going off. And there are these alien soldiers that are the inhabitants of that world that are kind of warring nations where they're in a constant state of war. And so when your group of heroes shows up, you're picking your way through the trenches and trying to accomplish whatever mission you were on, but being kind of hunted down by these patrolling alien soldiers at the same time. So when we decided to do this Brimstone Adventures idea with the team heroes, we thought it would be kind of cool to make one of those new teams that would be exclusive to the Kickstarter, mm-hmm. Being able to sort of play as the bad guys, play as anti-heroes. Ah. And so we picked this Tredaren Strike Team set, which basically lets you play as a team of those kind of World War I style alien soldiers going on missions into worlds that are maybe Earth-based, mm-hmm. where you're going in, going into the Old West mines or going into the Norse lands of the Vikings, but trying to steal their resources or plant a doomsday device or, any number of other kind of crazy nefarious plots that alien soldiers might have when invading other worlds.
Oh, very, very cool. I always like a board game where I can actually break out the evil villain laugh once in a while.
Yeah.
Last thing I want to touch on, the Kickstarter is actually doing insanely well. You guys are busting through stretch goals, and I see you have tons and tons more planned beyond where you're at. how far have you guys planned for this one to go?
Well, hopefully we've planned far enough, but it's a relatively short campaign, like we said, so, it's definitely doing beyond our expectations, so it's we're pretty excited that it's been so well received, and I think people have really enjoyed what we've shown so far, what we've unlocked. They've enjoyed the previews of stuff that's coming up, and I think they're really going to like the stuff that's even still secret.
Ooh, yeah, secret. In our previous Kickstarter, we actually showed like a huge amount of everything that could be unlocked,
mm-hmm.
and on day one, people were super excited and they saw that. And then, day four, day five, it's like, well, we've already seen everything that's coming. Now are we going to get there? And we really like doing this way better, where we just unveil like three or four at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time people log in to check again, they're seeing like, oh, not only did we unlock a stretch goal, but we also revealed some new ones. And so it gives people something to discuss and get excited about.
Yeah, it's a little bit of mystery and excitement over kind of revealing that next thing.
Yeah, I can dig it. Okay, very, very last thing. If anybody is wanting to connect and hook up with you guys this year at like shows and events, are there any big ones you guys are planning to, have a presence at?
Of course, yeah. So just coming up really soon, we're going to be at the Gamma Trade Show. That's kind of an industry show here in the U.S. in Reno.
And also almost, it's overlapping actually, Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Gen Con we go every year. So we're going to have a big booth at Gen Con in, I think it's in August this year.
Yeah, I think it's very start up.
And then PAX West. PAX is Penny Arcade Expo. So PAX West is in Seattle as well. And then that's in, I think September. It's the last weekend of August, first weekend of September. Mm. And then finally, we round it out with Dice Fest in October.
Ah, I see. So you're staying on the American side of the pond. I couldn't tempt you to come across to maybe UK Games Expo or something. I'd really like to get together with you guys, maybe get a beer, get a game on.
That sounds great.
That does sound like a lot of fun.
Well, now that you've invited us, I guess we'll have to come. I don't know if we'll make it this year, but maybe we can set something up.
Oh, crap. I'm going to have their entire team crashing at my place.
That's not for us, right?
All right, well, guys, it has been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. It sounds like the Kickstarter is going great. Everybody out there, if you're curious about it, definitely get in and check it out, because Shadows of Brimstone, it's a fabulous game, one that's well worth checking out. Any last things you guys would like to add about the campaign or the game itself?
It's just been a lot of fun coming up with all this stuff, and then even more fun getting to see people's reactions to it when we unveil it. So far, it's been a pretty wild ride.
Yeah,
and I would say, you know, I'm really, really excited about these new miniatures. They're some of the best ones we've ever done. And I don't know if we actually said it, but for miniature fans out there, these are in Games Workshop style hips, hard plastic.
Yeah, multi-part hard plastic kits. They're 32mm heroic.
32mm heroic scale, and they're on frames and everything. And the interesting thing is, you know, we count this from a gamer side, and so we learned a lot of really interesting things once we started making games, and I have so much more respect for all the different games I played growing up that had miniatures, because so much goes into it, and we've gotten a lot better with our miniatures over the course of doing the different Shadows of Brimstone things by taking on more of the responsibility ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for the latest rounds of things, we've been actually laying out every miniature, like showing every piece. We want this arm going this orientation. Mm-hmm. We want it connecting to the sprue right here. And we, you know, when we started out, China, where we do manufacturing, they were doing a lot of those things. And it turns out you have to be really hands-on if you want to do a really good product, because China doesn't know, you know, what makes a good orientation for or layout for the sprue, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think these are going to be the best miniatures we've done yet, so we're pretty excited about it.
All right, well, guys, you have me curious. I definitely want to see these whenever they hit production. Thank you once again, everybody. Tell you what, get your comments in below. Tell us, are you excited for the new Shadows of Brimstone Kickstarter? Are you going to be jumping in? Me and the guys will move on. We'll see you again soon. Okay, that was actually a really cool chat. I'm glad I
hooked
those guys.
Too much hot air for me, actually.
See, for me, I like this. I like the idea that I can do Shadows of Brimstone, do some Vikings, do some Conquistadors, and mix it with the Old West, and have the weirdest party going in dungeon crawling.
I think this is so ridiculous that it's not surprising. I'm all up for it, really. It is. I'm very excited, sir.
And those models just look lovely.
Oh, they're gorgeous.
Oh, I know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, gorgeous. We were talking about...
Oh, the skeleton
conquistadors. Yeah. Jerry, why is your head so big?
You had me at skeleton conquistadors. Is that better?
You see Jerry shrinking down.
Yeah.
The snake men.
Ooh, yeah, okay. Snake men, and you've got the biggin.
Look at it.
That's an XL-sized Crocs and Beastie.
Yeah, they're also doing a Frost Giant in this, which I noticed. Oh, yes.
No, it's really, really exciting. You know, we were talking about, do you have any miniatures that you could put into another game? And, oh, yeah, here comes some more.
Yeah. Well, talking to the guys, it sounds like this is going to be a really great
Jerry,
one.
It's you with less hair on top.
Ooh. Actually, I've been told to grow my hair back and then shit like that.
So Jerry, what I'd like to know is, when they started off with the dolly for that one, was it nude?
Or why are we doing this? Come on.
Whoa.
Oh, there. It has to be all there, otherwise the trousers and cloth doesn't
know.
Hang properly.
I knew this guy who had some berserkers, and they had no pants on, so he had to model some pants for them.
Didn't model any pants.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Snipped them off. Snippy.
Who needs?
They're but really nice.
They're looking good.
Ooh, what happened there?
I don't know.
So suddenly we went a little bit sci-fi.
No, more trolls. More trolls. Oh, yes.
I think that's the same troll.
It is. It's
I don't care.
It's not
true. You go down to the next one.
Goblins. No, Gremlins. Sorry, Gremlins.
Yeah.
And then down here, there's your Frost Giant.
Oh, man.
He looks so good. These guys are going from strength to strength with what they're doing.
Yeah, I love it.
Just, I'm super happy with
it. I am too.
So does the Gates of Valhalla box come with all those?
I'm not sure, but
look at the Kickstarter page.
I will say it's a short Kickstarter account, so if you're going to check
it, yeah, put it there. Comes with that.
And there you go. Jerry to the rescue.
It says 6 days left.
Yep.
So if you want it,
well, 6 days left from when?
From time of filming.
From time of filming.
Yes.
So now
you see what you've done.
I broke the magic.
So now you have to find out when this was filmed.
Well, you track Justin down. You wait for the Kickstarter to end, and then you just count back.
Yes,
do numbers.
That's a good idea.
But then we'll teach them about the magic of film.
No, seriously though, this is definitely one to check out. You're going to get a ton of stuff in the box, and you're going to be able to have a lot of fun.
Ooh,
yes.
9 days
so
to go.
It's like,
so this isn't a lie. I was right. 6 days.
You see, he was wrong.
This is current.
This is why we have guests, so they know how the show is run.
Yeah.
Right.
Sorry, Ben.
Anyway, let's move along. That's enough Vikings.
Sorry, other
there is something else happening.
But this is really, I'm really talk about something he's really excited about.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm really here regardless.
This next one I really like too.
No, Jerry's very excited.
You're really excited?
Am I though?
What is it, Ben?
I might be.
Is Terrain Crate 2. So this is then coming back with a whole bunch of new terrain
in
your tabletops, creating sets for a whole bunch of different genres. Now, their past stuff very much focused on the idea of fantasy gaming, whereas this is kindly a little bit more towards the pulp side, and also historical at the same time. So if you're playing a lot of Walking Dead, for example, or if you're playing some bolt action, they've got some options for you
or
there.
That terrain could definitely be... Well, no, I was more thinking... In somewhere maybe a few thousand, not 100,000.
I'm thinking Cthulhu-esque.
No, I'm thinking more. There's certain inquisitors in certain places might have.
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, Gothic like, Mediterranean.
Some of us have other hobbies.
That couldn't be set into like a nice fantasy place. Though.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because I mean, like, there's an inn I know of, and I'm sure it could do with some beds and chairs. You know, maybe a kitchen unit
and a garden.
And a garden, yeah, with some mushrooms.
They unlocked the squirrel yesterday.
No, I've seen the squirrel. No, oi, you.
Don't
anybody have seen any of my profiles?
But have you seen the
squirrel.
Two tick squirrels?
There's two tick squirrels.
So they didn't get but one squirrel, but they got two.
Well, they got one squirrel, it's just in many places.
Yeah. I know someone with a squirrel nut.
Ben's trying to
profile.
Say something sensible.
So I was going to say, the sets as they break down, as you can sort of see them on the Kickstarter, you've got Bleakwood Hall, which is a little bit of that manor house feel that we were talking about. So if you're doing some spooky mystery style stuff, you've got that there. There's Campbell Heights, which is a little bit more of an American backwater town.
I love this set
that
they're
doing.
Ooh, that's nice.
Which is very cool.
You get a free video game now.
It's a Dead Zone one as well.
There's also Bellevue Square, which is a little bit more of like a forgotten hospital facility with a horror twist to it. So if you want to go and check that out, that's there
Crystal
too.
Peaks.
Yeah. Okay, I really like the campsite stuff. For Walking Dead, that's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And then the final set that they announced this week was the Mournville Ruins. This was the one that's very much tied into the historical side of things, and Bolt Action and actually teamed up with Warlords to try and decide on what they wanted to use in that set. So this is very much for those people that want to play through a blasted European landscape, for example, going through the ruins there and things as well. So, and of course, they've also been adding on stretch goals, as we've been saying, and it's a neat way to sort of put together a whole bunch of different terrain for you to use on the tabletop. If you've got all the basic stuff down, like trees and that kind of thing, this then starts to add a little bit more set dressing to the mix, which is cool. So,
and one of the nice things they did as of, I'm not going to work out the maths. Yesterday, my time, many days ago, your time, they've changed it so you don't just have to order a crate. Mm-hmm. Because obviously a crate is, they've got the four different crates, so the crate contains multiple parts. Mm. They've said you can do a pick and mix. So if you like the papers, please, from the last section, but you want the ruined furniture for your bombed out house from another section, and then you want the trees from the garden, so you can actually pick the four pieces that will go into your bespoke little mini crate.
It's really weird. It's like pick your own birthday present.
Which is great, but there'll be parts that people will go, well, I don't need the mausoleum
parts. I always like
parts,
paying for my birthday present.
But I want the other bits.
Because then I get the ones playing, I want. a Cthulhu-esque role-playing.
Oh,
you don't necessarily want all of the World War II stuff.
No, but I tell you what, can you go to the damaged cottage stuff? Is there a damaged
cottage? Was that the cozy cottage?
The crumbling cottage. There
look at that. That's so awesome. If you wanted to have barricade yourself in for any kind of a
Yeah,
Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Good shot.
Go to Hasselfree, pick up your Ash.
Yeah.
How do they sculpt?
Stat him up. Stat him up for The Walking Dead and just get right in there.
Yeah.
See, up here for thinking, down there for dancing.
I know what we're doing next time I'm over.
Yeah.
The dancing.
I think we are planning to go for drinks
at some point while you're over. Honestly, I love what the guys at Mantic do for Terrain Creator because this is the stuff. This is something I talk about a lot. It's the incidental stuff on a gaming table. It does nothing for your game, but make the world look lived in.
Well, that's how Foreground really came about.
Exactly.
Was the fact of making it look more realistic. I mean, I think what I love about Ronnie's attitude towards gaming is if it's what he likes, he'll do it.
Mm.
And
yeah.
I think that really comes through in everything that they do.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a bit Warren-y in the fact that more is more for Ronnie.
Yes.
More is more. It's more is more. I want more of this, so there's more of this.
Yeah, but you've got to agree with him anyway.
And what's our last one, Ben?
So the last one is from the guys at Shield Wolf Miniatures, and they're on Kickstarter looking for funding for their new Goblin multi-part plastic set. So they've been doing some work in the past on a whole bunch of other things. You would have seen they've done some Shield Maiden stuff in the past that Justin used for his Fabled Realms Warband, which is pretty cool.
Daughters of
I love their work.
Yeah, they've also done orcs and barbarians and all kinds of things like that. But they're now focusing on working on the goblins. So this is a goblin set that comes with around 25 miniatures in the set. You get 5 different styles of bodies to use. You've got hand weapons, bows, spears, and a whole bunch of other bits and pieces in there if you wanted to try and make some slightly more command-style figures for your armies. So if you're playing something like Ninth Age or something and get stuck into that, or Warlords of Era 1, for example, you've got some really cool options here for those people that want to try and play those games out.
Lovely.
As well as part of the Kickstarter campaign for the multi-part plastics as well, they've also got some options for you to go and pick up some of the existing stuff they've been working on. So some of their old plastic kits and also some of their beasts and monsters. Like, for example, they've got these things called the War Toads, which I think are absolutely awesome. So you know how goblins mostly ride around on squigs? These guys are riding around on massive, huge toads, which I thought was really awesome and really cool sort of direction to go down. So, if you like your goblins, you've got some choices there as well.
Lovely.
They also kind of remind me of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yeah.
The Killer Tomatoes. Yeah. Oh, I used to love that cartoon.
Yeah, so you can pick up the old bits as well.
Yeah, lovely.
That's nice. Oh, that mammoth.
Yes.
So much nice stuff from those guys. Now, Kat, quick question.
Yes.
There are goblins in Fabled Realms.
Yes.
So this could be a perfect set if you want to do a nice big warband of them.
If you want to do a warband of goblins, it could also be good for games with ranks and flanks.
Yes.
They could definitely be used for Fabled Realms. There are lots of forest goblins in Fabled Realms.
Yeah.
It's keeping the forest goblins out of it that was the problem.
We also, of course, have civilized goblins as well within the ranks of other factions.
Yes, okay. All right, well, everybody, I think we will close it out for the day. We will be back tomorrow morning bright and early for the Weekender XLBS. You will be joined by myself, by Ben, by Jerry, by Ben, and by Cad, and goodbye to everybody else. Do not forget...
So if you think this was rambly...
Oh, yeah, that's where you're off the chain, but...
Why are you looking at me?
Let me finish not my you. Show!
No finishing. No surrender.
Okay, everybody, if you want to be in with the chance of winning one of those 2 copies of Armies and Legions and Hordes, make sure you have liked, commented, and subscribed on the Beasts of War on YouTube. We will see you bright and early tomorrow morning on beastsofwar.com for the Weekender XLBS. Do not forget, if you are not a backstager, you will not be fit to view, but we do have a 1-week free trial if you want to listen to us ramble some more. We'll see you again soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now, and be sure to check out beastsofwar.com for the latest gaming news and gaming let's plays. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe, and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.